The following live presentation by Rabbi David Aaron is brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To learn more about Israelite, please visit our website at www.israelite.org. Additional contact information is available at the end of this presentation. Thank you for learning with Israelite and enjoy the experience.
Vayetze, chapter 28. The parsha starts off with Yaakov is going out. The idea of this parsha is going out. The idea of the parsha is being in Galut. Yaakov is going to exile. He's being chased. He sees in his dream the angels of the kingdoms that will in the future rule over the Jewish people. And therefore, we have to see the story is not only an individual ancestor of ours that's going to exile, but rather we have to appreciate that this individual in the higher worlds, right, is a manifestation of a much greater drama that is just starting. It's the Jewish people in exile. And what happens with Lavan is only a particular manifestation of a greater drama which will happen to Jacob's children. And I would say one of the reoccurring themes that we've seen, and you should see this also, there's no big chidushim here, if you read it carefully, which is what we're trying to learn to do, we'll see that the reoccurring theme is darkness, right? Hiddenness, deceitfulness. Well, that's from the same place, right? When you're lying, you're hiding something, right? You're being what we call shady character, right? And Yaakov, his whole tikkun is to see the light in the darkness. And to see the darkness within the context of light. He's not like any of the other forefathers. Because the other forefathers, yeah, sure, the Yerushalmi says, the Talmud Yerushalmi says that Abraham transformed his Yetzirah into goodness. And that he came to some kind of peace with it. And Yitzchak broke and subdued his Yetzirah. But I believe Yaakov has reached this higher level where he doesn't even have to transform his Yetzirah into Tov. Because even his Yetzirah as the Yetzirah can be working for goodness. And that's the highest level. Right? That's the highest level. That he's able to see the light in the darkness, not transforming the darkness into light. Because if you have to transform the darkness into light, that still implies that the darkness in some way conflicts with God. Right? And the only way to deal with it is by converting it, transforming it. But we believe even the darkness, as darkness, in no way conflicts with God. That God's oneness can include the possibility for there to be evil people in the world. And God doesn't have to fight the evil or change the evil. Even those evil people, in the most ironic way, will serve God. Right? So Yaakov is the man who's able to see the light in the darkness. And what does it say? Vivga b'makom, he encountered the place. So your old tradition says, this is classical, that this is talking about Yaakov establishing Marv. Right? Because Abraham established Shachrit. It's the daytime. Yitzchak established Minchas, the night is coming and the judgment is coming. Yitzchak sweetens the judgment. But Yaakov establishes Maruv at night. And what does that mean, to be able to daven at night? It means to be able to see God even in the darkness. It means to encounter God and recognize God's closeness even in the darkness. And really, what's interesting about Yaakov, which we haven't seen by anybody, is that where everybody else has had prophecies, what is Yaakov having? Dreams. Now, why is Yaakov having dreams? Because again, what is a dream? A dream is in the darkness. And again, Yaakov is seeing God in the darkness. Right? He has a vision, he has an encounter, but his encounter is with God in the darkness. And then he goes to Laban, which is kind of funny, right? Because who does he go to? He goes to a man whose name is white. Well, what truly is the color of this man? Black. He's darkness. Now, he's the master of deception. Now, he's the master of hiddenness. And yet it's funny because that which is dark, again, for Yaakov, will ultimately be a source of light. Why? Because the darkness of Laban worked it out that instead of Yaakov marrying Rachel, he marries Leah. Right? And Leah is very hidden. We don't know much about Leah except that she cries, that her eyes are weakened from crying about Esau. And again, he meets, what? Because everyone knew that she is supposed to marry Esau. That Laban had two daughters, and his sister Rivka had two sons, and what a shidduch. And so it was clear that the oldest would be marrying Esau. And she cried, she didn't want to be part of Esau. There's nowhere to say that she really did belong to Esau. Right? She really was befitting Esau, and she cried. Right? She cried her eyes out until she was able to divorce herself from being part of his portion and be deserving and able to be part of Yaakov's portion. And so here's Leah. She's really connected to Esav. And of course, Esav is connected to darkness. He's the evilness. And where does he meet Leah? In the darkness. He doesn't know who she is. Right? He doesn't know who she is. And she's deceiving him, deceiving his brother. And when he finds out it's her, the very beautiful Midrash that records the conversation, what does he say to her? Of course, he says, "What do you do to me? What's going on? You deceived me." So she said, "Deceived you? In fact, I'm a student of the deceiver, which is you." Right? So who are you talking about deceiving? But it's very important Midrash, because over here we have a proof of what we've been saying the whole time, because she says to him, "Listen, I deceived you, L'shem Shemayim. Just like you deceived your brother, L'shem Shemayim." So it's very important. She replied, "I am your student. I learned from you how to do it. Didn't you answer your father who asked if you are Esav, and you responded, 'I am'?" Right? So he said, "How is it that you said when I called out Rachel's name in the middle of the night, you answered yes? How could you do that?" And he said, "Well, how did you do? I learned from you. How did you, when your father in the middle of his darkness and his blindness called out and said, 'Esav'? And you said, 'Yeah, I learned from you.'" But she said, "Just as you acted deceitfully, L'shem Shemayim, knowing this was the right step to take, so did I. I did it L'shem Shemayim. I did it for the purpose of God." Right? And we'll understand that a little bit later when we understand better, because it says that she wanted to participate in bringing the tribes into the world. So again we see Yaakov in darkness, Leah representing that darkness. And what does he have to see in Leah also? He has to see the light in the darkness. Because who will eventually give him the most children, it's Leah. And who, from whom will come the ultimate Mashiach, Mashiach ben David? It's from Leah. Never again, it's seeing the light that's in the darkness. Seeing how darkness can serve the light. And that light will be funneled through the darkness. And this, of course, is crucial because that's what Gullus is all about. Gullus is that ability to be in the darkness. Because that's what Gullus is, it's darkness. And even though we're in the darkness, the promise is that we will see the light that was actually in the darkness. So now, I want to just clarify a little bit about Yaakov's dislike for Leah, which we didn't really talk about that much yesterday. Because it says that Yaakov doesn't like Leah. Of course, why doesn't Yaakov like Leah? Because she belongs to Esau. She belongs to Esau. And this is his problem. This is what he's dealing with. What he has to deal with and work out is he has acted like Esau. He has taken Esau's blessings. He has incorporated within himself that which in the context of other people's personality is just darkness. Here, the darkness within his personality will be serving light. But this is very difficult. He has to work this out. And he doesn't want Leah. He doesn't want more Esau in his life. But what again, he had to realize that Leah was a portion to Esav as a tikkun to Esav. And as you see here in personality, it's in fact Leah who recognizes Yud-Kei Vav-Kei. So she was actually a tikkun to Esav, and therefore she's a tikkun to the Esav aspect. She's the balancing aspect in Yaakov's life. Because Yaakov draws into himself the sense of Elohim, which is the exclusive Esav approach. And the tikkun of that will be Leah. And Yaakov himself is coming more from a Yud-Kei Vav-Kei place. Tikkun to that was Rachel. So you see that through his relationships, he actually comes to the completeness. Now, after she gives birth, Rachel gives birth to Yosef, Yaakov says, okay, it's time to go. Now, of course, why all of a sudden now does he say, I want to go? So we can see that on page, on chapter 30, verse 25. V'kasher yelda Rachel et Yosef. It was when Rachel gave birth to Yosef. Yomer Yaakov el Levan, Shalcheini. I'm ready to go. Ve'elcha el mekomi l'artzi. I will go back to my place and to my land. Now what happened? Why was he running away from the land in the first place? He's running away from Esau. Why all of a sudden is he now saying, okay, now I'm going home? What has changed? We could say that the fact that she had a child confirmed that he was still Yaakov. I mean, he's seeing all this success with the wife who was destined to Esau. So perhaps we could say, pshat, that after he saw that he had a child of Rachel, that's confirmed that he was still in touch with his Yaakov side. Maybe. But the Midrash says something different. That once Yosef came into the world, we can look at Rashi, Mishinoled sitno shel Esav, that when the accuser, the fighter against Esav was born, because it says in Avadia, in the prophet Avadia, Vahaya Beit Yaakov Eish, Ubeit Yosef Lahava, the house of Jacob will be a fire, and the house of Yosef will be the flame, right, the light that will come off it. Ubeit Esav lekash, and the house of Esav will be like straw. Right? So he knew that now he has the antidote to Esav. Now that I got a Yosef, Esav can't touch me. Right? Now, what is it about Yosef that gives confidence to Yaakov that he could now go back and look at Esav in the face and not be frightened of Esav? What is it about Yosef? What is it as a personality? Well, what do we know about Yosef, which we'll see later, but now is the beginning of the tikkun. He finds Yosef in Galus. Isn't that what Yosef is? Doesn't Yosef become this incredible politician, this master of economics in the physical world? He actually becomes a master of the physical world. But he does it with a sense of kedusha. Now, Esav's the same. Isn't he a master of the physical world? In fact, isn't that what Esav wants? Esav wants Olam Hazeh. He doesn't want Olam Haba. He doesn't want Beis HaMikdash and all that kind of stuff. He doesn't want to be a priest. He doesn't want to be a rabbi. Right? He likes it in the fields. He likes it in Olam Hazeh. He's willing to trade off everything, the world of eternity, for the world of the moment. Because Esav's connected to the world of the moment. Give me that food and let me drink. It's basically the attitude of we shall drink, be merry, tomorrow we're going to die. Live for now. Without seeing the moment with the context of, within the context of eternity. Right? Now, even though Yaakov has drawn into him Esav characteristics, he hasn't completely played that out. Because it's going to be Yosef, his son, that's going to play it out completely by being that politician, being that person in the world that's based on the moment. Because that's what this world is today. Right? That's what everybody's into. People living for the moment. Whatever is motivating people is the excitement, the joy, the energy that's drawn from the moment. And trying to see the moment disconnected and divorced from any eternal context, as if this moment must serve some greater theme. Right? The moment is significant in and of itself. Well, it is Yosef that goes to a place that's based on the moment. Right? I mean, Egypt is the most sexually perverted place in the world. Right? And sex is based on the enjoyment of the moment, unless it's for the purpose of establishing a relationship with your husband and wanting to bring children into the world, right? If you do that, then the moment becomes meaningful within the context of eternity, right? It takes on a quality of eternity, but it's still the moment. Judaism is not saying, no, you're not supposed to enjoy that relationship with your husband or wife for that moment. But only, that moment is only meaningful and valuable within the context of eternity. Right? Now, the interesting thing is that they say about Yosef, they say that Yosef was so beautiful that he was fertility image, fertility symbol in Egypt. Which is very interesting, because fertility symbol, I mean, if you're just having sex for fun, what do you care about a fertility symbol? Right? But this is when we see Yosef, this is what Yosef's able to do. Yosef is able to completely bridge the gap between the world of the moment and the world of eternity. Right? And unify the two. The world of the chol, the world of the secular, of the particular, within the context of the world of the eternal. So it's Yosef that is actually very much in line with Esav, who lives in this world and enjoys this world, and recognizes this world from inside out. But the difference is that Yosef knows how to connect it to Olam Haba. And therefore, he can fight Esav. Because you can't fight Esav by saying Olam Haba, when Esav is saying Olam Hazeh, right? Next world, this world, next world, this world. But what you can do, you can undermine Esav. You can fight him, but by fighting him, you give him, what do you give Esav when you fight him? By fighting someone, you actually confirm their presence. By fighting somebody, you really substantiate them. And Yaakov can only fight Esav until now. But it's Yosef that can completely undermine Esav, because Yosef is able to take it all into Olam Hazeh, be absorbed completely in Olam Hazeh. He's got the finest Egyptian clothing. He knows the Egyptian language. He's living as a king in the palace of a king. He's mamish in Olam Hazeh. And yet he's able in Olam Hazeh to be still in the context. And his Olam Hazeh still within the context of Olam Haba. Right? And therefore, he's the one that can really undermine Esav. Another understanding brought down is that it's interesting because the name Yosef means what? What?
To gather,
but also it means Tosefet, as God's, as one of the understandings that Rachel says. She says, "In God will add to me another child." Right? Yosef means addition. And when Yaakov saw that he had a son named Yosef, which means addition, Tosefet, he said, okay, now I'm ready to go back. Now, what is going on? What's Esav's name? Esav comes from the word asui, made, completed. Why did they call him Esav? Because he was born looking like an old man. He looked complete. And so they called him Esav. And yet Yosef is referred to in a number of places as a child. As a youth. There's something very youthful about Yosef. Right. In fact, it's kind of hard to relate to Yosef as an old man, right, at any point. Because for some reason, he's a symbol of youth. And that's the tikkun, that's the fixing of Esav. See, evilness is based on thinking you're complete. Evilness is based on thinking you're whole. That's where Esav's coming from. Esav's coming from this position of drawing from an encounter with God and recognition of divinity as Elohim. And a recognition of divinity as Elohim means I am godly, or I could be godly. I am whole, I'm complete, I'm godliness already. I'm holy. Right? But Yosef is that person who is based on, in essence, growth, becoming, adding. He knows the secret of being incomplete. And therefore, Yaakov feels confident he can go back there. Because he's had all 12 kids so far. Well, actually, not all 12 yet. Right? But he's had Yosef, and Yosef is a reflection that he has maintained that sense of being incomplete. He has maintained that sense that he's not like an Esav, who thinks he's everything. But Yosef is that boy that represents that there's still more, that you're not complete. And therefore, this is an indication that to Yaakov, that I have succeeded in being in Laban's house. I have succeeded in being in a place, because the midah of Esav is gaiva. That's clear, right? Haughtiness and conceitedness, right? Because that's what it means to be conceited, right? C-O-N is like container, right? The C-O-N means you're all-inclusive, you're it, right? You're self-contained, right? So that's conceit. And that's the fear of being like an Esav. Because it's out of ego, it's out of selfishness that people lie, it's out of selfishness that people manipulate. And Yaakov did something, but was he able to do it in a way that it didn't feed ego? Because he did it l'shem shemayim. And this he sees when Yosef is born. Right? Yosef is the sign. He sees in Yosef, I'm sure prophetically sees the characteristics of Yosef. He sees that Yosef is an indication that I'm ready to go back. Right? That I'm complete in terms of who I am. And I'm now able to go to Esav and look him in the face without any way feeling that I've been like Esav. Okay. In the darkness, Yaakov's finding his strength. And that's, by the way, what they say about the word galut and geula. It's the same word. Gole means to be exiled. And geula is adding an aleph in the word gola. Right? Because gola means exile. And geula means redemption. All that is to find the God in the darkness. The aleph. Right? That's really galus, right? And that's really redemption. Real redemption is redeeming, right? That you redeem the sparks in the darkness. That will be the ultimate redemption. The Jewish people come back to the land of Israel and not say, oh, that was the end of galus, we forgot about it. But they will retroactively realize and recognize how much God there was in galus for them, right? And how important Gullus was for them at that time. Okay, so now we have this very strange scene. The Yaakov wants to go, and Laban saying, please don't go. And Laban says something which is just a reoccurring theme in Chumash, in verse 27. V'yomer lav Lavan, imna matzati chein beinecha. If I have found favor in your eyes. Well, it's a little kind of strange. Why would I find favor? Favor in your eyes. Nichashti, I have through an omen, through my, you know, avodah zarah ways, through signs, I have figured out vivarcheni Hashem biglalecha. I see that God has blessed me because of you. Okay? Again, a reflection of the relation between the Jew and the Goy. Or of Avimelech. Where he recognizes Avram as a source of blessing. And just as the story of Yitzchak with Avimelech, where they didn't see that in the beginning, but later on recognize that and come to him and say, let's make a covenant with you. The same thing. Lavan doesn't want the tzaddik to leave him. That even Lavan, even someone like Lavan, is experiencing bracha because of the tzaddik. Right? Because of the tzaddik. So he says, I don't want you to go. So, says, give me whatever your wages are and I'll pay you. Please don't leave me. And so Yaakov says to him, listen, you know how much I've worked for you and it's time for me to go. And also, Yaakov recognizes in verse 30, Ki ma'at asher haya lecha, the little you had, lefanai, V'yifrotz l'rov, it's become great. V'yivarech Hashem otcha l'ragli, and God has blessed you upon my foot, meaning the day I stepped foot in this place, you got bracha. Again, that picture of the Jew being the source of bracha to the world. So then, now what am I going to go make my own house? Right? That can't be just altruistic. It's time for me to do my thing. I have to develop my sense of self. Okay, so they have this long conversation, and they come up with this deal in terms of what he would like, try to keep him to stay, and there's this very strange scene about the sheep. And he says, well, I'll take the spotted ones, and the striped ones, and the speckled ones, and you have the, you know, the clean ones. It's really interesting, because what is Yaakov doing? It seems like he's taking, you know, you want the spotted sheep, when you want, like, the nice clean ones, right? But again, it's Yaakov who's taking that which looks like darkness, for him is his light. Right? To others, it's darkness. Right? He's not saying, give me the best, I'll take the best sheep. So I'll take the worst sheep. Right? Because even the worst sheep for me will be the source of the best sheep. Right? He understands this already. Anyways, they do this deal, and Lavan rips him off again. Right? Does this whole shtick. But it's fine, Yaakov does something that's very weird. He takes these branches inquires them in different ways that they kind of look like spotted sheep and speckled sheep. I mean, the branch looks spotted and speckled and striped. And he puts it in front of the place where these sheep are going to drink. And these sheep see these sticks, and they conceive and they start to give birth to those type of sheep, which were the type of sheep that he said that he had the right to take. Okay? Now this is very strange. Right? Now what is he doing here? Right? So, on one hand, it looks like Yaakov is being quite clever. He has figured out some very advanced technology in breeding, right? On the other hand, it's clear that this is a miracle. And this is supernatural. It's not just technology. It's supernatural to be able to do a thing like that. And the Midrash says that it was supernatural, right? That the Midrash says that the water that they were drinking turned into seed, right? And that's how they conceived. Crazy thing. So the question is again over here, well, is it technology? Or is it miracle? But this is typical of Yaakov. Because he's beyond that duality. He's beyond that dichotomy. Did Yaakov do it or did God do it? Right? Did Yaakov with his technology do this whole thing? Or is he simply in the state of surrender to Hashem's will and that's what happens? The answer is, more than both. This is Yaakov. Yaakov has succeeded in being created in the image of God. Yaakov has succeeded in being able to establish a sense of self, in a complete sense of self, in a complete state of surrender. He's able to hold on to Elohim, which is technology, later on we'll see, and yet still have the sense of Yud Kivavka, everything's in God's hands, and that's what his life is all about. Reflecting that which is for most people some kind of dichotomy, paradox for Yaakov. The light and the darkness are one for him. Right? And he doesn't have to forfeit the darkness to see the light. And he doesn't have to forfeit the light for the darkness to still be darkness. Okay. So he comes away with all these lambs. And the Zohar says that what Yaakov was doing is he was doing Biru Nitzotzos once again. He was reclaiming his portion within Lavan's portion. Because right, that's what he's doing over here. There's Lavan's sheep, right? And out of Lavan's sheep, Yaakov is somehow clarifying and selecting his sheep. But his sheep came out of Lavan's sheep, and yet it's Yaakov's sheep. Right? Again, this is a reflection of Biru Nitzotzot, which is what Yaakov's doing. Seeing the darkness or drawing the light out of the darkness. Drawing his portion out of the evil. And leaving the evil like evil. Right. And then they. It's very interesting because we have verse 43, and it says, "Vifras ha'ish ma'od ma'od," and the man became very great. V'lo tzon rabot ishvachot v'avadim gmalim v'chamarim. Right, he becomes very great and very powerful. Now, isn't this interesting? Because what do they call? What does the Chumash call Yaakov here? Ha'ish. Now why is he all of a sudden called it Ha'ish over here? And this reminds us of Yitzchak. Right? This reminds us of Yitzchak. That somehow when Yitzchak was in the land of Avimelech, he's also becoming rich in the world of darkness. But he's a stranger. He's a nobody in their eyes. Who is he? He was in a complete state of surrender. And now they're calling, the Chumash is calling Yaakov Ish. And Ish was a name used for the person who was in a complete state of surrender. He was a stranger, nobody knew who he was. Why, all of a sudden, would the Chumash call Yaakov Ish? So the word Ish actually hints to something. Aleph hints to Emtza'i, the middle. Yud hints to Yamin, which means the right. And Shin stands for small, which means the left. And this is Yaakov. Emtza'i. Aleph. Emtza'i. Starts with an Aleph. Means the middle. Because that's what Yaakov is. Yaakov is the unification of the right and the left. Aleph, Mem, Tzadi, Ayin, Yud. So, what this is suggesting over here, that even after everything he's done, after being in the house of Lavan, and he did again something that's a little bit manipulative, but it was kosher. I mean, he knows, again, how to handle Lavan, and he does all these tricks. But he still has the right to do these tricks because this is the deal that he had. And yet, Yaakov comes out complete. Yaakov is coming out whole. He's not going too much to the right. He's not going too much to the left. He's being able to unify the right and the left. Okay, so then what happens is, Yaakov is told, it's time to go. He's on his way out. And he escapes Lavan. And Lavan goes running after him. Okay? That's very interesting because there's a word, if you read it carefully, that reoccurs. The word is geneva. Theft. As we'll see, he runs away, and in chapter 31, verse 19, and Lavan goes out to shear his sheep, v'tignov Rachel et trafim asher la'aviha. And now Rachel is stealing. Right? All these people stealing. Right? Yaakov steals the blessings. Right? And now Rachel is stealing something. And she steals the idols of her father. And then it says, V'yignov Yaakov et lev Lavan ha'arami. And Yaakov steals the heart of Lavan the Arami. So everyone's stealing over here. Now, the Midrash says, why did Rachel steal? Why did she steal those idols? L'shem Shemayim. She again did it in the name of Hashem to save her father from Avodah Zarah. Right? So she took these idols away. He comes running after his idols. Right? Again, all this is so symmetrical because it's Yaakov taking the blessing of Esav. And the blessing of Esav for Esav would be Avodah Zarah. Because Esav is basing his life on an exclusive Elohim orientation. And now Rachel, Yaakov's wife, is doing the same thing. But she's stealing the Avodah Zarah, not just she could use it, but she could save her father. And then her father comes running and says, you stole my heart. Now, he'll say that later. But it says over here, Yaakov stole the heart of Lavan ha'arami. Now, why all of a sudden there's a verse called Lavan ha'arami? Lavan. Because look what ha'arami spells. If you change the letters around, it spells ha'ramai, the deceiver. Resh mem aleph yud means deception. Haramai is the deceiver. And he stole the heart of Lavan, the deceiver. Again, we see the recurring pattern over here that they have taken the art of deception away from the deceiver and has used it for God. Has somehow succeeded in drawing the light out of the darkness and using it for God. And so everyone here is doing all these dark things, but everything that's dark for them, being that it's in the context of light, it's out of the service of truth, it's out of the service of Hashem, they're able to reveal the light that's in the darkness. Because the darkness is serving the light. So, Yaakov and Esav meet up with each other, and Yaakov rebukes Esav. And that's amazing. Because it says that Yaakov gets upset in verse 36. V'yichar li Yaakov v'yarev bilavan. And he argued. Isn't that amazing? After all those years, and if you read what he says, you know, maybe 20 times you've changed my wages, you've deceitfully related to me the whole time I lived with you. Yaakov never once lost his temper. And this is all part of completing himself, that he could live in the house of such a deceitful person, be deceived, and yet faithfully go on, not lose his temper, never rebuke the guy, but just always trying to see the light in the darkness. Right? The light in the darkness, itself a reflection that he always succeeded in using the darkness in the name of light. So now he really rips into Lavan, and of course this parallels all the other forefathers. Because in the same thing that happened, Avram and Avimelech, when Avimelech comes to Avram, Avram rebukes him. And then when Avimelech comes to Yitzchak, Yitzchak rebukes him. And now here comes the encounter, the non-Jew, right? And Yaakov. And Yaakov rebukes him for the way he's been dealing, but they make a covenant. And they sit and they drink. And Lavan kisses them goodbye. What a nice story. Right? Isn't that amazing? Right? Happy ending. That's what Yaakov is able to do. He's able to create that kind of relationship with someone like Lavan without it drawing him down and only drawing the light out of Lavan. He actually makes a covenant with Lavan. Right, quite amazing. So all three forefathers have this relationship with these people, succeed in coming out complete on their own in terms of their own midah. Yaakov has to come out of the house of deceitfulness and still remain truthful, even though he himself is a master of deceitfulness. He will never use deceitfulness unless it's L'shem Shemayim, and he's willing to accept even the consequences. He doesn't expect to be rewarded for it. He does it because of the Kavod Hashem. Right? He does it for the Kavod Hashem. Like a son who does for their father, not in order to get a prize, Yaakov does it even more than that. Because it says, don't serve God in order to get a prize. Yaakov is not only serving God, not only not to get a prize, but even with the understanding that he'll get punished for this, he'll do it for Hashem. And so Yaakov comes out and he rebukes Lavan, and Yaakov then meets these angels once again as he's on his way out of Yetzei, right? And we might say that the reason why this parsha is called V'Yetzei, it means going out. He was going out of Be'er Sheva, but he was going into Galus. Everything, even Yaakov's going into Galus, was already the beginning of getting out of Galus. Because he understood what Galus would be for him. He was able to get out of Galus so much. So Yaakov, as he's going out, he sees angels once again. And these are angels of Elohim, right? And it says that he saw a band of angels, a camp of angels, and he called it Machanayim, the two camps. And the Zohar says, what's the two camps? It's the one camp that's two camps. It's the one camp that's able to include the right and the left. And that is what Yaakov says to Lavan. He says, if it wouldn't have been, and this is verse 42, Lule Elohei Avi Elohei Abraham, if not for the God of Abraham, Upachad Yitzchak, and yet the fear of Yitzchak that I had incorporated in my life, Hayali, Ki Ata Rekam Shalchaltani, I would have walked out of here empty-handed. Right? So it says, Et Ani Ve'et Yigai Kapai Ra'a Elohim V'yochach Emesh. God has seen my affliction and my struggle, and has proven emish, the yesterday. What's the yesterday? That I've succeeded in being true. I have never, ever transgressed the midah of Avraham, which is that sense of power in self, nor the midah of the attribute of Yitzhak, which is that sense of surrender. Right? And had I not had that in my life, I would have come out of here empty-handed. But Yaakov is not talking about coming out of there rich with money. He's coming out with something even greater. Right? He's coming out with proof that what he did in his father's home was L'shem Shemayim. Because he never used it for any other purpose. Even though he could have used it, he never used it except in the situation of L'shem Shemayim.
This presentation by Rabbi David Aaron has been brought to you by Israelite, inspiring a renaissance in Jewish living. To access additional presentations from our online media library, order our best-selling books, or learn more about Israelite programming, including seminars, web-based learning, teleconferences, spiritual retreats, Shabbaton experiences, Israel missions, and leadership training, please visit us at www.israelite.org. That's www.israelight.org. You can also call us in New York at 212-947-4990 or in Jerusalem at country code 972-2-627-4890. We hope you enjoyed this presentation, and we look forward to learning with you at Israelite.